So how do you manage multiple businesses simultaneously? Today, we're talking about juggling, but not real juggling. We're talking about business juggling. Let's dive in. All right, guys, welcome back to Montreal's Elite Unleashed, the podcast for hustlers looking to level up their lives. I'm your host, Logan Boyce. With me, as always, is Jonathan Ehrlich. And we are talking today about juggling multiple businesses, how to stay on track, how to make sure that your schedule isn't just an explosion of mess. I'm excited to start talking about this because it's something that I feel like a lot of us fall into where we're pulled in a million different directions.
Yeah, I think it's easy to get like the shiny object syndrome where the grass is always greener on the other side for so many different opportunities that come your way.
Yep.
But then something else happens when those opportunities start to become successful and things start to come into fruition and you start to, you know, it's this balancing act of how do you keep all of the plates spinning?
Right.
And I have less businesses that I have to manage than you do, but you're always a person that I look to who manages multiple businesses very well. And I see the way you're doing
shucks. It. Oh, shucks. Thanks, buddy.
Well, I know it's delegation and I know it's handing things down to the right people, mm-hmm. but you also do it in a way that's good where people don't get mad at you for not being there because they just know that you're doing so much.
Right.
And then they go down to the person who's underneath you to reach out to for things before they bother you.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I think one of the main things for me at least was when you're starting a business, when you're running that business, I think you need to make sure that you know what that business does. So the shiny object syndrome is cool if you've got the time and you can go and approach those shiny objects outside of the business. So that's again, a lot to say, but if your business, let's say you're in real estate or if you're in insurance sales, if somebody comes to you with a completely different type of thing to do within that business that doesn't match with what your core values are, doesn't match with what your vision is, but you're like, oh my God, it can be a quick and easy buck. That's a recipe for massive, massive failure. Versus if you've got a nice real estate business and something comes across your table, you're like, hey, this could be really fun. And I've got an exit strategy. I love starting businesses with the end in mind.
Interesting. So you're not looking at it as like, I'm going to get into this business and I'm going to keep carrying this on over time. You're looking at it as like, okay, how do I get into this business and make it self-sustaining so I can move myself to like that seventh level or whatever it would be where you're just managing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just like, if I'm looking at a business, whether I'm buying it or starting it or whatever, you need to look at it like, okay, what is the end goal for this business? What is the ceiling? And that's been a really, really interesting thing that I've gone through is I'm looking at the various businesses that I'm involved in. And every single one of them has a ceiling. They all do. Like the real estate team has a ceiling. The coaching business that I have, there's a relative ceiling there. The one thing that doesn't really is the investing side. That's what in theory doesn't really have a ceiling. That's why a lot of times I'm looking at that like, oh my God, I'm salivating about that business a little more regularly than some of the other ones.
Sorry. So break that down for the people who are listening who obviously don't know how many businesses you have going.
Right.
So you mentioned multiple businesses there.
Yeah.
So like list them out.
Yeah. So I own part of a coaching company, Elite Real Estate Systems, mm-hmm. Out of Omaha, Nebraska. I own part of that company, which is super cool. I also own Montreal's Elite Real Estate Group, which is the real estate team operating here and out of this podcast studio in Pointe Claire. So that's fun. And I own Elite Real Estate Services, which is a 50-50 partnership between myself and one of my best buddies from kindergarten. And so that's a real estate investment business where we hold and flip properties as well. Those are kind of like the main ones. There's other kind of like sub businesses you could kind of talk about. Like I have also a small business. This one's very small comparatively to the other ones I just mentioned, but I have a business where I set up people's tracking and metrics tracking for real estate agents, teams, so that they can put it up in their office like the way that we have it, where you've got a leaderboard, you've got a total volume, you're tracking your KPIs, like, okay, what's their conversion rate? What's people's call conversion? What's their appointment conversion rate? All that kind of stuff. And then like this podcast, for instance, that's kind of a business.
I would consider this kind of like a business. There was a lot that went into getting it off the ground. And
it's not profitable though. Don't do it.
Yet.
No, I think everything like, for instance, this podcast, I had to start with, okay, what do I want it to be? And how do I want it to positively affect my life or my other businesses? So that's before we get started.
Well, I think first of all, anybody who listened to that and who like saw, okay, these are the different businesses you have, they're all centered around the same business. They're all businesses that can be around it.
Yep.
And what's interesting is you didn't go the route of like that shiny object, and we said it a lot, that shiny object syndrome is when something gets put in front of you and it seems like it's going to be easier than the work that you have to do in the main business.
Yep.
So you say, okay, well, I'm going to stop doing the work in the main business. I'm going to focus on this side thing until it gets to the same roadblock where it becomes difficult work, because it always will, to the same level of what you were doing before. And you just wasted all that time to get there when you could have just been focusing on the main business. So to contrast that, you didn't take businesses like painting, for instance. You could have said, hey.
When I was 16, I did.
Well, that's it. We both did.
We sure did.
Yeah, we were taking these paintings. And you could have said, okay, well, I'm good at painting. I know painting. Right. I could do that. But just the cost per hour for your time is not as beneficial as something like flipping a house or coaching, for instance, and stuff like that, where the cost per hour value to what you're already doing is significantly higher. So it made sense. And it also walked in lockstep with the business you're already doing.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of an accidental almost, but I knew that real estate was the domain. And then I just focused on what kind of ancillary businesses are easily built around the core business, which is Montreal's Elite Real Estate Group. It's, you know, what other things can I build around it? And I, one of the reasons I wish I lived in the United States is because then I could have ownership and title insurance and a mortgage company and all that kind of stuff. I still want to do all those things. It's just, it's the barrier of entry is way, way harder here in Quebec. But yeah, those would be kind of the next, you know, crosshairs that I have pointed at would be mortgage, obviously not title. We don't have that here, but mortgage, maybe a notary's office, even if it's just part ownership, it just makes sense. Like if we've got a 20 plus person team putting together hundreds of transactions every single year, it only makes sense that those people are using businesses that I own, because that the end consumer, person that's buying or selling a property, they have to work with all these people anyways.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, hey, why not?
And the world seems to be going more to that like one-stop shop.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people are friggin' lazy at the end of the day. And that's not a bad thing. I think everyone's time is so constricted now, you know?
Well, from a perspective of the consumer too, though, they don't know all of the different places that they need to go, right, all the different touches that they need. So for the consumer coming in, it makes sense that they can come to a one-stop shop.
100%.
Regulations are obviously, they differ and they vary, but yeah, that kind of just rings true and makes sense to me.
Yeah, I would assume the experience would be better if they don't have to like bounce around and make calls and find these people. Oh, this person's busy. This guy can't do it or whatever and blah, blah, blah. Whereas if they can come into, like you said, a one-stop shop, it would be easier. So,
but now, so you, the problem then becomes if you find that business, right? If you're like a dog groomer and you're like, you know what? I can partner with the dog grooming products and sell those separately in in my store.
Yep. I partner with the dog walker.
Yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden you've got all of these other things going on.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. So dog walker. Well, you don't want to be the dog walker then.
Not necessarily.
You have to be the person who funnels business to the dog walker, but you don't have the time to do the dog walking. Similar to real estate, you don't have the time to do the painting.
Right.
Or cleaning, right? Cleaning people, having that service. So how do you identify the business and how do you find the angle to come in with the business from the entrepreneurial's mindset?
It's usually just a need. So you just from working in real estate, we find opportunities all the time. And it made me pretty upset that I was handing these opportunities off to other people. And I was like, okay, like for, I don't remember what year it was, but we came across two like very good flips, And we ended up selling it to other people. And it just kind of made me sick. I was like, man, what are we doing? Like I'm making a 3% commission, 2.5% commission on this sale, like big whoop. You know, I could have flipped this and kept it as a rental property. I could have flipped this and made way, way, way more. I think that was the necessity, as I saw it happen in real time. And then it became, okay, what is stopping me from buying this myself or buying this with a partner? So the first flip we ever did was on King Street in Pointe Claire. And there was nothing stopping us at the time. The mortgage regulations at that time were pretty freaking lax. So Bruce was able to get qualified with me as a secondary person. And we ended up buying it standard financing, which is awesome. But as regulations tightened up, became a little more complicated. So then we had to start looking for money. It became, okay, we need money to flip. We need money to be able to buy it, but then you need money to carry it, and then you need money to actually perform the renovation. So who's gonna lend you the money? Well, you can find hard money lenders that'll lend you money at 15% plus a file fee. You can find those, and we did. It's really expensive. It's really, really expensive.
What's a standard file fee?
any man, I've met private guys that charge like a 3% file fee. It's insane.
On the total.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. The more standard rate is like 1.5% to 2% for a file fee, and then they charge you like a 14% to 16% interest rate.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's insane.
If you need a $500,000 loan,
yeah.
Your file fee is 15 grand right off the bat.
It could be, yeah. If you're paying the three, that would be insane. Yeah. But like, if let's say you're paying two, it'd be $10,000 before you even see the money.
Yeah.
And then so you see the money after that. And if, some great companies, they'll balloon it all, you know, and just wait for you to sell it.
Okay.
But there's nobody.
They gotta trust you.
You still need a down payment.
Yeah.
Like, they won't lend you more than 80% loan to value. There's no way. So if they're lending you the five, if you're buying a $500,000 property, they will only lend you 400. So you need, you have to have some cash. So, yeah. You know, we did a couple of flips to start to be able to have that working capital to move forward. And then it just became, okay, we could do this at a better scale if we found lenders that would take less. So we ended up finding lenders that would take less. We worked with this family trust downtown for a little while. That was amazing. We charged us 8% no file fee. That was the best. We've never been able to beat that. We've never been able to beat that. They've since not continued to lend. I don't know what happened to them, but they
realized they were getting screwed.
They were like, wait, we can get 15? Good Lord. No, I don't know why, but they stopped lending. So we ended up working with this other guy, and he's great too. And he, we're now paying 11 with like a $1,500 flat file fee, which is just amazing. So we're able to say yes to more deals, which is great. But you know, we saw that as a need. You know, when we were talking about when we were building Montreal's Elite Real Estate Group, one of the things that happened was we found nobody knew who we were.
Yeah.
They didn't know what we were about, what makes us different, all the great stuff that we do. And so doing the podcast business was a natural thing, because it's okay. How do you fight obscurity? How do you fight ambiguity? Well, you do that by spamming content to people to make sure they know who we are.
Yeah.
So I think it's working.
Yeah, the amount of people who have come out now and see what we have been doing has actually been really refreshing, and it's great. So anybody who is listening, if you did listen to this and you heard me say this, shoot me a line and let us know that you have been watching us.
Yeah,
it's always
nice
to hear.
Yeah, it's so good hearing that.
Very nice to hear that. So that is kind of like a middle ground of like where to get money for a business, because people will hear $500,000, they'll hear a couple of $100,000 and think like, that's a lot of money. Yep. For a business to borrow that kind of money, that's actually not a lot of money to be borrowing, especially right. when it's secured against an asset or something like that. But you're also working with a coaching company that's doing it on a grand scale.
Huge, yeah.
You guys have borrowed larger sums and based on evaluations of the property. So how does does that work?
That's a huge conversation. I think, well, you know, you get a guy like Steve Murray who did our evaluation for Elite Real Estate Systems, and he was like, okay, you're currently worth 10 mil. If you continue on the trajectory inside, I think it was a 5-year evaluation to be able to hit 400 powered by clients, your valuation is going to be $200 million. So we're like, well, we're on pace for that. That's sweet. You know? So, that was great. So we're getting offered money, but we want to keep it as self-funded as possible. Mm. You know, we offered some investment opportunities to people who were clients of ours and then elected to become powered by ERS or powered by Elite is what we're calling it now. And so those people have bought in, which is super cool. Like, I would rather have people that we've influenced in a super positive way be our investors than some venture capital firm that's going to want like a bazillion percent of our company and all of this kind of stuff. So that's,
So you guys went public? Is that how that worked?
No. Oh, okay. Not at all.
So it's all just private. It's still private.
But yeah, exactly. It's like Series A, Series B funding, and all of that stuff. So we're going through all of that.
Then you like earmark the money for like Lamborghinis for everybody when they come in.
That's an awesome question. No, but that's obviously the first question that gets asked when you're looking for funding is, what are you going to use my money for?
Yeah.
How am I going to see a 5x return? Because somebody who's investing in like a startup like this, they don't want to see 1.5x return. That doesn't excite them at all.
Yeah.
They want to see 5x if they're going to drop like $500,000 or $1 million into your company.
So this is really like Shark Tank-esque, right? Where people are looking at, you're doing like a presentation of, here's all the numbers, here's everything. And then you have the different people who you want as investors. And then you both have to agree. Like you said, you don't just want that faceless venture capitalist who's going to just they're soulless and don't care.
We're pretty fortunate because the leader, the not necessarily a loss leader, but the leader of the company is the coaching business that funnels most of the clients into the Powered By platform. And for those of you who don't know what Powered By is, it's a platform that partners with your team and takes over all of your marketing, payroll, HR, gives you an entire tech stack, including Boomtown, Monday.com, Gusto for your payroll, HR. It takes over absolutely everything, has a dedicated marketing team for you, even delivers leads to your business as well. It does all of that for a subscription service, which is very different than some of the quote unquote competitors that want 50% ownership in your team.
They're also this video sponsor.
I guess so. But yeah, so that's one of the businesses, and I think it's awesome. It's that one's got one of the highest caps when I'm looking at like where do all these businesses cap out? That one's got one of the highest because we're on pace to be worth like close to $1 billion,
yeah,
which would be insane.
Well, that's one that I've actually witnessed from the outside and then witnessed from the inside and seen the growth because I'm a part of that as well.
Yeah.
Thank you for the path to all of that. But that was once again a natural transition. And that's kind of like that. We're already doing a lot of this inside of our business anyways.
Yeah, so much of it made sense. Like the fact that we do, part of the coaching business is that realtors will sign up and they can come and join our live trainings every single week, Mondays and Wednesdays. And that's so cool because we were running trainings anyways. So now the curriculum is dictated by ERS, which is fine. So we come into the office and we run the curriculum and it's great. We've got like anywhere between 50 and 150 people that come on to the live over the internet. And then we've got our own team here that attends in person, which is super cool.
Which is great too, because from the coaching perspective for the team leaders, that's where they can offset some of that work themselves.
100%, yeah.
Because a lot of them too, they're managing multiple businesses. I find real estate is one of those places where people do try to find like those multiple businesses, whether it could be the flipping or something else with that.
So
they can offset the training to a place where they can actually trust that, yes, their agents will get trained
well. It's kind of an easy offload. We used to tell people like, you got to train your agents, and they'd be great for like 3 months and then it would just all fall apart. So yeah, let's just do it ourselves.
Yeah.
But ERS was great. Kind of fell into my lap, which is really awesome. And I've just been trying my darndest to keep kicking ass with them as best I could.
So you said fall into your lap, and it's kind of funny because I feel like it shouldn't be that against the grain. It should be something that feels natural.
Yeah, because you see an opportunity. It's kind of like the flipping business, right? Like that, I could have said this same thing. I could say the flipping business fell in my lap because we were selling flips. We were selling huge opportunities to other people. And we were like, no, this is stupid. We should be doing this ourselves.
Yeah.
So we started with it. And it's the same thing. I actually really like your dog analogy, where it's like you're a dog groomer. What other businesses are surrounding the dog groomer that you can get involved in? Yeah. It's tough because, you might see somebody and they're very successful with their crypto investments, or they're very successful in stock trading, or they're very successful in, having an Amazon marketplace, or they've got an eBay store or whatever they're doing. And it's very tempting to just be like, yo, this looks so much easier than the cold calling that I'm doing, or this looks so much easier than, whatever it is that you're doing on a day-to-day basis. Let me go try that. The problem is you're seeing somebody that's probably failed at it for 2 years you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg of the success. You didn't see any of the work that went in to create that.
Well, they're also learning constantly. People who are doing that, they're on the treadmill listening to people who are teaching them the whole way through. They're listening to the podcasts of people doing it. They're learning about all the different systems. Like, how many systems do we have just in real estate alone?
Dude, it's insane.
And then if you look at the coaching side of things, how many systems are there learning about, and especially with AI coming in order to keep up with the pack now, you've got to be using AI.
Yep.
It's funny. I actually asked someone the other day, like, what AI systems are you using? And we were on a Zoom call and they were using Fathom.
Oh, nice.
To record. And they didn't even notice that they were using Fathom
because it's so just been funny.
So integrated into what they do. So it was pretty funny.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
No. So in terms of juggling, I think it's an interesting thing. It's something I'm constantly wrestling with trying to get better at, is just making sure that the schedule makes sense. I've got this weird thing, and I hope that any of the listeners don't have this because it's a horrible thing and I wish I could fix it. But I have a really hard time having a day where I'm focused on like three businesses during that day. I need a day where this is my day on this business. Mm. I'm getting better at it, right? Because I am pulled in a lot of different directions. I'm getting better at it. But for the longest time, I'm thinking back like 3 years ago, I would either have a day in real estate, a day in, the flipping business, or a day in whatever. Like I couldn't, I'd have to have some kind of separating thing. So a lot of times what I do now, and again, I don't condone this kind of scheduling, but what I do regularly now is I'll have a day where I'll, you know, get to the office, you know, 9:30, 9 o'clock, something like that. I'll finish up, you know, 4-ish, whatever, head home, spend time with the family, spend time with the kids. And then once the kids are in bed, I go back down to my home office.
Yeah.
And I'll work there until like 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And then the entire process repeats. And that's the way I was able to separate it. You know, if I'm doing coaching and I'm working on ERS during the day, then at night I'll be doing projects for the real estate team or projects for like running analysis for the flipping company or something like that. Yeah. I have a hard time slapping one of those in the middle of a day where I'm doing other shit.
Yeah, it's funny. You're kind of changing your location. So it's changing your state. So you're changing what you're doing.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Because I was going to ask, that's funny you went there, because I was literally thinking that exact same thing. How do you switch from one business to the other? Because I find it like it's not hard to do each of the different businesses when you're doing it.
Yeah.
It's just hard to make the switch. It feels like a whole other day. It feels like a whole, there's a whole bunch of weight in that shift as you go to the next business to be able to. So it's funny because you take the time for it to just be another day. It's a whole other business. That 2 hour, 3 hour, 4 hour separation makes it, oh, okay, yeah, I'm starting up the other business now.
Yeah.
Not like you're jumping back and forth between the two businesses. You do that too.
Of course, you have to. Sometimes you have to, and you just got to grit your teeth and do it. But the main thing that I would say is make sure that you're telling yourself, and I mean literally telling yourself, hey, it's okay if I only get half a thing done.
Mm.
Because a lot of times, and I'm sure I'm speaking to people right now that have this going on where they don't want to start something unless they can finish it. And I have that a lot.
Yeah.
So I have to tell myself before I do something, because I know it's a big project and I know it's going to take me like 6 hours, but I only have an hour to throw at it. I have to say it out loud. I literally have to say, Logan, you're going to do an hour's worth of work. You're going to get 1/6 of this done and it's going to be a huge win. Let's go. And then I'll do it. But if I don't do that, if I don't say that affirmation, if I don't follow through on that, I'm just going to be like, let's put it off. I'll have more time for it tomorrow. I'll have more time for it over the weekend. I'll have more time for it tomorrow night or whatever. And it's like the only time that I still do that is when it's, you know, midnight and I'm like, okay, I'm already fading.
Yeah.
I don't want to start something brand new. Let's call it.
So actually that's a really good point, because you're stretching yourself out into so many different areas. I think you also need to be able to stop. You need to be able to realize when you're not being effective.
Stopping's for pussies. No.
Well, but it's true. If you're doing something that's taking you 3 hours to do it, that you, if you were fresh, would take you an hour to do it.
Yeah.
Then there's a problem here.
Of course.
And I find that's one of those things, especially when it's like the minutia and like the, if you're excited and you're jazzed and you're wired, go for it. But if you're not excited about something and you're already exhausted, then taking that break to actually allow yourself to refresh and recalibrate,
sure,
I think is more beneficial than grueling and dragging through it for 4 hours and then not being fresh for anything else. And you have so many other things on the go.
Pussy. I'm kidding. Oh my God. No, I'm so messing with you. Got me. Listen, I will put one little asterisk on that. I totally agree, by the way. I 100% agree. You don't want
to
be.
I'm talking to people who are like killing it, like go-getters. That's the thing. Yeah, I know exactly where you're going.
Yeah, if you're in debt,
yes,
suck it up. You gotta figure it out. You know what I mean? Like if you're in debt and you're in trouble, then it doesn't matter if you're tired, doesn't matter whatever. Like you owe it to yourself and your family to get the hell out of debt and figure out your life.
Well, it's pain and pleasure. And I think it's the thing, like if you're letting yourself go too much, then yeah, you need to suck it up and keep doing it. I'm talking about the people who are,
yeah,
they started work at, you know, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning, and now it's midnight, 1 a.m.
Yeah,
and
just like, go to sleep.
You got to go to bed, like, yeah, at that point.
Yeah.
But if it's like you got into the office at 10 o'clock, you left at 3, and it's like 6, 7 o'clock, and you're like, I don't want to start this new thing that I should be doing. At that point, no, yeah, suck it up and do it.
You mentioned something too that I want to touch on is monitoring your own energy levels. I think is really important. There's times where I'm kind of lethargic. And I'm like, man, I'm just not sharp, man. I'm just not sharp today. Those are the days where I'll end a little earlier. Those are the days where I'll whatever. But if I'm jazzed up, like I got my vitamins just right, you know what I mean? I'm feeling good. I've had my coffee hit perfectly at exactly the right time. I'm fired up. That's not where I'll take my foot off the gas. That's not where I'm like, oh, you know what? you know, now's the time to have a nice quiet dinner in and like watch some shows and whatever. That's not the right time. I think if you have energy, you should feel obligated to use it, you know, because it's not all the time. And I'm, you know, maybe I'm only speaking to people with like, you know, ebbs and flows in their energy level. Some people maybe are just flat, you know, good level all the time. That's not me. I have days where I can freaking conquer the world, and I have other days where I'm kind of just kind of mid.
Yeah. No. I think the...
Yes, like, I use mid now.
Hey, mid is perfectly acceptable.
I'm one of the kids now, I guess.
But I think if you look at like highly successful people who are doing a lot, that is kind of their thing. Mr. Beast, he's doing a ton of stuff. Yeah. And he says the way that he works, he wouldn't recommend that anybody does this, but it works for him. And I guess if it works for you, it works for you. And for him, what he does is he doesn't like take days off. What he'll do is he'll just go as hard as he can for as long as he can, because he's excited about everything that he wants to do.
Yeah.
And then he'll just like crash on one day, and he'll just take that day. And he'll keep doing it. Sometimes it's eight days. Sometimes it's 15 days.
Find what works for you. That's sick. I love that.
And then he'll get that 1 or 2 days where he recuperates, recharges his batteries, and then he just hits it again and keeps going. And it's funny because you look at like a Grant Cardone, that be obsessed or be average. I think that's the first time that I had actually heard someone say like, it's okay to be obsessed.
Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. To want to do the thing that you're excited about, your business, your baby, your thing that you're working on. And if you got that, don't let the societal norms of like, okay, well, you've done enough for today, or you should really take it easy. You're going to burn out. Well, no, if you're jazzed, you won't burn out.
No.
If I've learned anything about having a kid, is that if there's something there that's really like, it's so important for you, your body will just find the energy somehow.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I've gone multiple days at this point with like an hour and a half, 2 hours. You've seen my sleep tracker.
Yeah.
And it's like, how am I still upright? I don't know. It's just, you find it. The energy's there.
Yep.
So maybe it's not the healthiest, but your body will find the energy.
Did you hear about that guy who did sleep hacking at the college? I don't know if it's college or university. Did you hear about this guy?
I've heard of sleep
hacking
before.
So he decided to get like 3 degrees at once. And so he slept on average 30 minutes every 24 hours.
What?
Yeah. So what he would do is he did this for almost 3 years. What? Or something like that. I might be misquoting it. This is why if we had a bigger production, I'd have somebody looking this up for me. But
yeah, we get like, Alex, you want to just look that up?
Damn it, Alex, and your busy schedule. I'm darn it all to heck. But yeah, so this person, I'm probably misquoting, but it's fine. The meat and potatoes.
Really, it was 8 hours and it was one degree.
No. it was bad. It was like he was sleeping max like 30, 45 minutes a day.
Holy
and he
shit.
Did this for a long freaking time. And what's crazy is now he's back to a normal sleeping schedule, but he's got 3 degrees that would normally have taken him like, it would have taken him 3-4 years to do it. And he did it in a year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's insane what he was able to pull off. Now, what isn't known is what are the long-term effects of what that is. I'm fascinated by sleep in general. I think it's so interesting that whoever designed us was like, you need to recharge.
There was
8 hours a night or
a
whatever.
A comedian who was talking about having to explain sleep to aliens who don't need to sleep.
Dude, right? I saw that too. That's so funny. Yeah, we just need to power down.
For 8 hours, we just power down. That must be boring. No. I have movies that play in my head and I'm the star of them.
Oh my God. It's so funny, man. Oh, but, good Lord.
But that's the thing too is I follow Joe Dispenza a lot, and I'm actually reading Becoming Superhuman now, one of his other books, because I read Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And now in this book, he talks about the chemicals that are inside of your body that flow, that when we relive experiences in our own mind and we get stuck in places and we hurt ourselves by doing that. But he also says, because we can be tethered to the past in that way, our consciousness lives in the present always. Our present is affected by the past, but it still is in the present. We're just refiring all of those neurons, all of those chemicals from that time that we are reliving. Our body's just taking that same thing. Well, we can take that past and put it to the present. And we can fire all of those neurons, all of those emotions, all of those chemicals from what we make for our future, leading us to it. And that's that idea of like the secret. And a lot of people, you know, they don't maybe follow or believe
manifestation
in
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting because you could then say, okay, well, what is sleep? Why do we need sleep? What is it about sleep that is important? What is it about something that excites us and drives us forward that keeps us upright and keeps us moving? Whether it's like fully the most healthy thing for us to do or not, we can do it for stints and we can help our bodies fire in a specific way if we're purposeful and if we're driven towards whatever it is that we're driving towards. So I think our bodies.
What was that book? Say it again for people listening.
It's the author is Dr. Joe Dispenza, and it's Becoming Supernatural, and it's all about kind of meditation and all of the mind stuff. He's an actual doctor, and he did a lot of scientific studies on the mind and the body and how we work, just from, you know, the idea of spiritual, but taking spiritual and moving it into an actual physical realm to understand what happens when we do these things. And it's fascinating.
That's cool.
Yeah. Our bodies are much more than we think they are.
So when people are getting started, what's going to happen is like I was saying before, is you're going to have days that you're dedicating for certain things or time blocks that you'll dedicate for your business. If you're still in a job and you're dabbling with the idea of becoming an entrepreneur, then you're going to need to find a time to do that. And I've done this training so many times, I could recite it blindfolded and earplugged, but it's time blocking is bullshit at the end of the day. Anybody can time block. I can open your calendar right now, click and drag, and all of a sudden you've time blocked. Look at you go.
I'm so busy.
Look at how busy you are, bro. Wow. So busy.
I've got a big blue block there. I'm sorry. I'm busy.
Yeah. Sorry, bro. Can't do it. And so that's fine, but it's, you know, what are you actually doing in that block? And that's why I like the term time behavior. Cause what that means to me is, okay, I say that I just finished my job at 5 o'clock. I'm home at 6. I'm going to spend some time with the family, with the kids, whatever. 9 o'clock, I'm dedicating 3 hours from 9 till midnight. I'm dedicating that time for my new business venture, whether that's, you know, whatever, the dog grooming company, this company, whatever it is that you want to build to accomplish your dreams of stepping out of that 9 to 5 and building something for yourself. You have to be ready to go at 9. It means it's not 9, you make a coffee, you know, you send some texts to your friends, like, gonna get started, here comes the hustle. Like, dude, shut up. Like, 9 o'clock, you should be already working. And it's the same thing when I'm coaching realtors. It's they're saying, well, yeah, I'm going to lead gen tomorrow from 9 to noon. It's like, okay, are you going to lead gen from 9 to noon? Or are you going to arrive to the office at 9, make a coffee, high five the secretary, you know, have a conversation with me or with John or with whoever. And then you're only going to get on the phone at 9:30. You're going to realize you didn't have breakfast. You're going to have a protein bar at 9:45. You're going to high five the secretary again, like whatever, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden your time block from 9 to noon, which is supposed to be 3 hours, really only became 2 hours, which doesn't sound like a big deal in like a, just a one day off thing. But if you think compound, that that's okay, yeah, read the compound effect.
Yeah.
Because as that continues on, the person that is doing 3 hours every single day versus the person that's not in that time behavior mode, that person's going to get outpaced so friggin' fast to the point where you're not even able to catch up. You won't be able to catch up to the same person that's doing the 3 hours every single day.
And time behavior is one of those things that is, it bleeds into other areas of your life too. So if you're letting yourself get away with that in that section where you've blocked something, you're going to block something else and you're going to allow your time behavior to be bad there too. Versus you get somebody like, there was a realtor who did a talk at one of our offices, Dan Grebe.
Oh yeah.
And he literally like locks himself in a room. Mm-hmm. And I think we've actually talked about this on the podcast before too. It's like lock yourself in the room with just a phone. And you're like only making calls for that period of time. Yeah. And the only way they let you out is if that building is on fire.
Right.
Like that's it. So yeah, being purposeful with the time behavior, 100%, but splitting it up for the different businesses.
Right.
Is the only way to manage.
And if you have multiple businesses, then, you know, understanding what's the priority right now. I think that's tough to do. But it's something that is important because one of your businesses might have a need for something and your other business might have a need for something else, but it's not necessarily which business has the biggest need. It's which business is going to get you the best ROI for that time that you're going to put in at that moment. And a lot of that has to do with not necessarily looking at it like, okay, this is the quick buck, looking at it like, hey, when I started this company, when I you know, had this vision, this is what I want it to become. So when you're thinking about prioritizing different businesses, think about what the ROI is down the line. Think about what it is that the business could look like down the line. And that's how I like to prioritize a lot of the time. You know, there's some things that you end up having to do because it is what it is, but focusing on what that business is going to become if you put that time in regularly and what that looks like. Obviously, there's fires that need to be put out regularly, and that's just the name of the game. But I think prioritizing which business is in need, but also in need to the degree where if you help out, it's going to accomplish its vision and give you what you wanted it to give you from the get.
Yeah. Yeah, it forces you to audit your time, really.
Yep.
You need to be doing, like, we get stuck, especially as business owners. We want the path of least resistance. We want to do the things that are fun. Yep. We don't want to do the things that suck and that are hard.
Yep.
But you realize and learn very quickly that the sucky hard stuff is the stuff that's going to progress you the most and be the most important to do.
This is such an easy thing. Is like, it sucks. So if you're not the only one that doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So if it sucks, it means most other people aren't doing it either, which means your competition is less, which means the barrier of entry is high, which means you're going to win.
Yeah.
And when you win, you make money.
That's it.
Insane.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting kind of dichotomy there. But I think just overall prioritizing where it is you're going to get the most return on your investment of time, I think is important when you're prioritizing. Other than that, I mean, you can prioritize based on schedule too. It's like, okay, I would never prioritize anything over the real estate team at 9:30 on Friday, because that's when we run our meetings. And that's just what it is. That's a scheduling based priority. Yep. Where it's like, is that the best use of my time when I'm looking at all the businesses that I'm running? Maybe not, but it's a scheduled priority.
Well, there's the peripheral, intangible benefits of doing something like that.
Right.
There's so
like
many
with the vision, right? Yeah. If I continue to do this and I'm spending this, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours every single week, I know it's going to accomplish Y when the team gets to whatever size that we want to grow it to.
Yeah. So having that understanding as well, but having it be like a cognizant and like not like a, having it be purposeful.
Yeah.
Once again, you know that there are things that you could be doing that would probably be better for your time, but intangibly, there's nothing better than what you're doing.
100 million%.
Yeah. And we know that from tracking it and from seeing it and from being a part of it.
Absolutely.
For so long.
Absolutely. And yeah. I want to close the loop on one of the things that we were talking about, which is the shiny object thing. Because I think we really went hard on that, which is great. I just want to close the loop a little bit on it, because I think it's, we want to make sure that if you're running a business, if you've already started an entrepreneurial company on something, let's say you were selling mugs online or something. So somebody comes to you with an idea to use the money you've made on, you know, selling mugs to now start selling something else.
Chainsaws.
Yeah, chainsaws. Perfect. That's not a good idea, because you're using your business of selling mugs and you know what your business is. Your business is selling custom mugs on whatever website you're doing to whatever people. You know your target market, you know your target audience, you know your cost per lead, you know your cost per acquisition, you have everything lined in. And this person comes in and gives you something you know nothing about. That's a mistake. That's just, it's not in your purview. It's not in the right realm. The reason why I think what I've built is doing okay is because it's all in the same realm.
Mm.
You know, if somebody came to me with an idea of, you know, selling computers in, you know, like shipping computers to Africa or something like that, or shipping cars to different countries and selling them, I'd be like, that's not for me. I know nothing about that. I would know nothing also about if somebody said, okay, well, you've done great with coaching, so we want you to sell whiteboards. I wouldn't know anything about that. So I think it's if there's one thing you take away from this podcast so far, it would be avoid the shiny objects that aren't in your purview. Make sure you're scheduling and time blocking for your entrepreneurial business. Make sure that your time behavior is impeccable within that, and make sure you're prioritizing well. And don't forget about your family. Don't forget about the people that love you and honor you. So make sure you're prioritizing everything that you need to be prioritizing. Hopefully we learned a few things about juggling and keeping all the things in the air with multiple businesses. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Montreal's Elite Unleashed, the podcast for hustlers looking to level up their lives. See you next time.